On agenda tonight, Climate Change Chief Daphne Kane, MHK, and climate campaigner Rob Mercer, MLC, tell us about COP26 and the now likely serious impacts of climate change that world leaders continue to avoid addressing. Is the Isle of Man too small to bother? Should we just adapt to the changes that are coming, or is it all some lefty plot to improve the world for nothing?
I'd say it's a given. Nobody's arguing about the science. The only question really is how soon is it going to be a catastrophe and what we can do to avert that. We have to keep global warming. We have to keep the increase in temperature to below 2 degrees and ideally to 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about possible or probable. It is the greatest threat. The greatest threat that we face now, and the efforts that we've seen at COP26, I think have moved on from the last one. I hope to think of this as an optimistic way forward, but we're seeing perhaps not quite the commitments that are going to keep us under that 2 and preferably to 1.5.
Well, I think as part of Net Zero Isle of Man, there's a lot of public engagement going on. One of the days we attended at COP was youth empowerment, and it is really moving to hear from Indigenous women, representatives of all different islands, the significant effects already on their communities. And this is an existential threat. They won't be there in 10 years if we don't keep temperature rise to below 2 degrees. And I think that the moving speech Mary Robinson, former president of Ireland, who actually came here to open the House of Monaghan, she was in tears when she was interviewed by Sky News because of how serious it is. And I think David Attenborough, when he opened the conference, he told world leaders they are powerful enough to save the planet if they work together, and that's the key. And certainly I would agree with Rob, it was a very optimistic feeling on the ground in the different countries' exhibits throughout COP, actually. Really optimistic, and Bear Grylls, the speech, really optimistic. And from the ground up, especially the youth up, there is no question. It's just, please get on and take some action.
But isn't that the problem, that unfortunately you have a whole load of people who are already clear and understand what the issue is, and they're campaigning and they're doing saying all the right things. But the problem is governments are elected by majorities on the whole, and there's a fair proportion certainly of people in most societies in most of the developed countries of the world who still think that we've got plenty of time and this isn't really a problem.
I'm not sure I'd agree with you there, Phil, in terms of, you know, is it a majority view anymore? I don't think so. I think it has moved on, and actually I'd like to pick up on your point about it, you know, saying it's a leftist plot or it's, you know, it's a right wing this. It's neither of those things. I think there are people campaigning for this and for change from both sides of the political spectrum.
I agree, it's completely mainstream. I hear the voices of all ages and from all over the island. There is quite a bit of eco-anxiety. Mm. Last night, one of the events on the island, one of the webinars it was a live event last night hosted to coincide with COP, quite a young crowd, lots and lots of conversations, a lot of eco-anxiety from some people who are really fearful about what our future is going to be. And I think there is an understanding that the Isle of Man cannot afford, international reputation-wise, not to be part of this programme, to get with the programme and to play our part in meeting those international recognised goals. And also, would we be an investable place? Would we be attractive to business if we didn't make every attempt to lower our carbon emissions and reach net zero by 2050?
Like you say, there are probably people who will never be persuaded that climate change is, you know, whatever the cause of it is. But the world has begun its transition to a low and zero carbon economy. And actually, if we don't react to that as our own economy, we risk being left behind. And so maybe some of those people who aren't persuaded about the science will look at it from an economic point of view and look at the opportunities that are present. in taking hold of that situation.
People of my generation may well be thinking to themselves, well, 2050, gosh, that's another 25 years ago. I'll probably be in a home for the bewildered by then. Maybe I should be now. How can you motivate people to do the sorts of changes that we need to do with such very lengthy timeframes for action?
Well, already the Green Living Grant Scheme was launched about a month ago. It already has over 1,000 applications, and that would be for the home energy audit, followed by the possibility of applying for £6,000 up to 50% of works to make the properties reduce their emissions individually. And that is what property is a significant area of our emissions. So I think people are on board. I mean, I think more than 1,000 in a few weeks is impressive on an island scale, and the overwhelming message coming back from the webinar on what you, the individual public, can do, and all these are on the website netzero.im. People want to go back and watch again or see the bit of information relevant to them. It was, what can I do as an individual to lower my carbon emissions and to you know, it's to help the Isle of Man. Who wouldn't want lower heating bills? Who wouldn't want a better insulated home? Who wouldn't want cleaner air because of lower fewer car journeys, for instance, on the island? So I think that the public generally, and the youth in particular, have got this message, and they are just asking government, what are you going to do? Under the climate change bill, which hopefully will receive royal assent if next week or certainly before Christmas, we will be legally bound to come out with a 5-year rolling action plan. So that will be the next five years of what we will do as an island to start on this journey towards net zero. And we also must put an ambitious interim target in for 2030. And I think that will really focus the mind.
Government has a pretty poor record in delivering anything meaningful in relation to this. I mean, you've mentioned the grant, but of course, for people like me who are perhaps a little ahead of the game, I wouldn't be eligible for the grant because I've already done a lot of the improvements that would be eligible under the grant. The 2050 deadline means that people can start thinking, well, if I hang on, there may be more money available to me at some point in the future.
2050 isn't the point at which we suddenly do everything. You're absolutely right. And establishing in law that rolling 5-year plan is an important part of that. And actually, we probably shouldn't focus too much on 2050 right now. We should be looking at the next 5 years. And actually, what COP26 is calling for is an acceleration of action. You know, there's been plenty of debate in Tynwald about, you know, are we on the high ambition path? Are we on the low ambition path? Because you have to also remember that if we do nothing between now and 2050, and then suddenly we have all of that embedded carbon that's been emitted during that time. That's why the high ambition pathway is an important aspect to it, because we're putting less CO2 into the atmosphere.
And now one of my bugbears is, why are we still as an island putting fossil fuel boilers, gas principally, in new builds, and knowing that this is going to have to be retrofitted in time, more than likely. So I think that, as well, we've just finished a major piece of public consultation at the end of August, and I'm hopeful that this week or next the results of that consultation will be published, and there is overwhelming support for bringing forward the date by which fossil fuel boilers must not be put into new builds. And that will help a significant number of people already. But there are other things consulted on, such as the 5 future energy scenarios. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the results of the public consultation were on that point.
The last 5 years from the Isle of Man government has been lots and lots of talk and consultation, but not an awful lot by way of delivery.
Yeah. I'd agree, but I think that the clamour for change and for higher standards is coming from some of the construction industry as well as the public. So the sooner those higher standards are put in place, and I've heard that the air tightness rating of sort of 97% is desirable. And actually, I've got a meeting this week with Construction Isle of Man, really looking forward to their views, because we can only move forward at a pace that the construction industry can support. And I think in terms of bringing the whole community along with us, that's a really important part of the picture.
there's another aspect to this, of course, and that is the retrofit of existing properties. And, you know, if you look at that as an opportunity for the construction and building sector, it's incredible. I mean, you know, the amount of activity necessary to bring our housing stock up to those standards means there's work stretching out for builders and construction, you know, and for years and decades ahead. You know, I think it'd be an exciting time to be in the building industry.
You're listening to Daphne Kane, MHK, and Rob Mercer, MLC. You have found yourself in a new and exciting role. Some cynics maybe might suggest that this is a little bit of greenwash and window dressing, in as much as you're the head of a board with no power, no direct statutory responsibility, no significant budget. But I would like to think that you would be keen to tell me, no, it's not like that. Things are going to be different.
I could see the perception might be that. I mean, previously, the Climate Change Transformation Board had five ministers, I think, on it when it was chaired by Policy and Reform Minister. The Chief Minister's in appointing me to this role has the first task, if you like, was to review the structure, make it more efficient, more effective, quicker to reach the decisions, and a better process generally. So already a paper has gone to higher up to say, is this kind of the structure that would work? I think we do have to cut through those levels, because then you end up talking about everything two or three times. And you're right about the budget. There was £10 million allocated in the budget, and yet the Climate Change Transformation Board only could authorise up to £10,000 spend. It was ludicrous, and it's not helpful in terms of focusing on what we need to do. But I do think that the no regret decisions that need to be made in the very near future, for instance, on another interconnector to bring power in from wherever of the adjacent islands, those sort of decisions need signalling sooner rather than later. And, you know, that would be above my pay grade. We can only, as a team, gather all the necessary research and information and present hopefully a compelling paper. Council and ministers will make that decision. But I think, yeah, a sleeker, more efficient structure of the board working with perhaps subcommittees on all of the different sectors, like transport, like heating, home heating, communities, and energy generation. You know, that we need a better way of working that is more effective.
Are words like sleek, more efficient, better, are these the sorts of things that you are familiar with in your time in government?
Well, I'd rather focus on the future, to be honest. And I think there's a new enthusiasm. This is the first time that I've observed the beginnings of a new administration. So maybe I've got, you know, a pair of rose tinted glasses on here, but there does feel like there's a great energy, a great enthusiasm, and actually a much more transparent approach. You know, the issuing of a draft for consultation for people to take a look at it. It's an unfinished piece. This is the beta version of the island plan. I think that's a great step forward. And I really do hope people, you know, contact their MHKs and their MLCs and explain where they think this is strong or where it's weak or where it needs some additional work.
And also, in appointing me to this role, the Chief Minister was very clear that by the spring, which will be a requirement under the Climate Change Act, hopefully, the five-year action plan, but by the summer, Alf Cannon wants the Climate Change Transformation Board, through me, to come up with the roadmap to 2050. So that's a piece of work that will really focus the mind, and accepting that some decisions will have to be put in as times to be taken, and it could change. But by the summer, we will have the roadmap to 2050, because that's what we've been tasked with.
Just one other observation. If you look at the themes of within the island plan, and you look at the same themes through the lens of the climate transformation, they're the same themes. And so there's this great opportunity there for the input from the climate transformation team and the board and the work that's already taken place to feed into those new themes of government. And I think that's a really positive step.
Still, an awful lot of people seem to think that this is going to cost an awful lot of money. And actually, one of the few areas where people seemed to be coalescing was this idea that maybe what we needed to do was extract out of the ground a whole load of gas, which would then pay for the all the changes that we need to make our bit of the world more sustainable. What do you say about the potential to extract gas?
From a climate perspective, it's a complete no-no. You do not, and especially the message from COP was loud and clear, you should not be extracting any fossil fuels. This is not the time. That would only add to our emissions by, I think the fugitive emissions would go up by 30%. And also any money that the island stands to make from that exploration would likely need to be spent offsetting against the emissions that it was generated. So from a climate perspective, it's a complete no-no. I sense that this might be a decision above my pay grade, like you described, but there is no question. They should stay in the ground if we are serious. I think there's also a question, would it break our Climate Change Act? Because we are committed to lowering our emissions and there's public duties. So there's several sections, I think, it would be questioned, let alone would we have any credibility as a nation if we went ahead and did.
But I suppose the argument is that we're going to be burning this gas anyway over the next 10 to 20 years, so it may as well be our gas and us making a bit of money out of it as being somebody else's gas, you know, gas from Russia, which is obviously becoming less and less reliable.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to sort of tackle that one, really. Is government going to be drilling this out of the seabed? No, it's not going to be our gas at all. It'll be a lease arrangement. It'll be a if it goes ahead, and it shouldn't. You know, the UN Secretary General in his introduction to COP was talking about a code red for humanity, and the fact that we're now a signatory to the Paris Accord. There's another reason there, I think, why this needs to stay in the ground. But the other thing that's, when people talk about cost, there is a cost of doing, of the status quo. There's a cost of continuing to do what we do now. And so if it's possible to change how you spend that money on a different aspect, then you're effectively, it may not be as much as we see headline figures and, but no one ever asks what is the current cost.
There's a considerable question, what is in the ground? Is there anything in the ground? And I don't think the answer to that is known, let alone I agree. We spent all these negotiations with the UK to have the Paris Agreement extended to the Isle of Man and consideration given to that, on the basis that we would lower the emissions and we would have an interim target by 2030. Extracting gas from the Isle of Man's territorial seas would mean that we couldn't meet that. So in my mind, I'd be completely against any extraction, and let alone the offsetting and the cost. Would it really make any money for the Isle of Man is in question, and actually it could do a huge amount of damage reputationally.
Where's it going to be landed? If this is natural gas, in order for us to burn it here, it needs to be scrubbed. It needs to have an on-island processing. We're going to bring that ashore at Cornet, put a little gas processing plant there. We really run the risk, I think, of investing in the wrong thing at the wrong time. And we'll end up with a stranded asset that ultimately the taxpayer will have to foot the bill for. And I think the time is right now to say, look, the time for transition, for gas as a transition fuel, was back in 2000 when we put our gas plant in. We picked that at the right time. We're in 2021 now. We're at the tail end now of this transition from coal to gas. Now it's all about renewables. Look at the cost of generation from renewables, and then compare that to even to gas. It's on par right now, and those prices are continuing to drop.
It's actually cheaper. I think renewable energy is now cheaper than fossil fuels and traditional methods.
But of course, there's two elements to climate change, and I'd be interested as well to hear from you, Daphne. Does the Climate Change Board that you now chair have a remit that covers both mitigation, which is reducing the amount of carbon that we put into the atmosphere, but also adaptation. Is adaptation part of your remit? Adaptation is basically things like the building up the walls along the Laxey River so that you don't get floods, and likewise around the harbours and this and that. Is government doing enough there to deal with adaptation?
I think in Laxey we've certainly welcomed the amount of focus there's been on the construction. There's ongoing work in Menorca and on the main road and surface runoff, and there needs to be more up in the hills. But I mean, I have to confess, we haven't convened a meeting of the board because we're still suggesting what that board format structure should look like. So once we get that, and I think nothing's out of remit if it helps mitigate adaptation, reduce carbon emissions, biodiversity, protecting biodiversity, increasing, you know, net gain rather than losing any more species or having them on the red list, like we heard from Manx BirdLife, I think it was. Everything is in the mix. There are lots of mitigations going on, but we know for certainty that sea levels are rising. There will be significantly more and greater rainfall events. So we feel the impact of that as an island nation, but it is nowhere near as bad as others. So when you're talking about the profits, potential profits, that I still think that we haven't really nailed down from extracting hydrocarbons from within our territorial seas, I would say planet before profits, if there even are profits, which again is up for debate, and if this is the appropriate time, as Rob said, to go ahead and extract that when renewable energy is now cheaper than and we also have the ability through the interconnector of importing clean energy.
You know, the saying is that biodiversity is the engine of adaptation. And so we really need to keep an eye on ensuring that we maintain a high level of biodiversity, because that is what enables nature to adapt to the baked in global heating that's already in the system. You know, quite apart from the fact that the work that's required to put a lid on that.
And I'd say, you know, people question what is happening. Nothing's happened apart from the huge amount of research and wealth of knowledge that's been built up, not least with the contacts that we make from going to conferences like COP and also the Under 2 Coalition that I attended the first assembly. But on the island, an initial peat restoration project has been agreed, funded, started with the first 1,000 acres of restoration, and that's aimed at transforming some of the most degraded areas of peat from a source of emissions back into one of our most important carbon sinks. And we're also looking at our blue carbon, where the Isle of Man, with the 10 marine nature reserves and the potential for other areas planting and storing carbon, we've got a really important story to tell. And in fact, blue carbon, along with our youth project, was showcased by the UK Presidency Pavilion on the video screen during COP26, and it was a really proud moment to see them there.
Effectively, what we mean by blue carbon is plants in the sea, and kelp forests have been shown to dramatically reduce the impact of heavy seas on coastal defences. You know, you can spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of pounds protecting highways and properties from the sea, or you could invest in a really good kelp forest and potentially save yourself a lot of money.
So we do have good stories. There's a lot of good work and preparation work being done, but in terms of the uplands, 1,000 acres of restoration of peat.
It's clear that they really believe we're on the cusp of change, and while my years of political experience make it hard for me to accept their bright vision, I really do hope they're right. But for now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gurumayu. Thanks for listening.